SCP-8596, Scopophobia, the Employee of the Month. The SCP Foundation is nothing if not pragmatic, earning them a reputation for often being cold and calculating as long as it gets the job done. Their stakes are very high, and so that often leads them into situations where morals and ethics are flexible, to say the least. One thing that they occasionally do is utilize anomalies themselves for their own purposes, despite their general ethos focused on containing any and all anomalies. The fact remains that certain anomalies can be useful, especially humanoid ones, regardless of the ethics involved. SCP-8596 revolves around a humanoid anomaly and his continued usefulness to the Foundation. Let's take a look. SCP-8596 is redacted from the record, but SCP-8596-1 is a humanoid entity identified as Dr. Eric Ramsey. He was initially contained in Site-322's anomalous containment, before being employed as a Foundation interrogator as part of the integration program. He's a Class 3 reality bender, enhanced empath, and telepath, capable of altering localized reality at will. He can also read minute expressions, physiological changes, and physical processes of any subject that interacts with him, and can also view the memories of a subject in real time, meticulously taking notes while doing so. After an incident relating to his integration in Site-322, it was discovered that Ramsey can remove and implant the memories of his subjects at will, though he cannot read memories directly. As a result of this, and negotiations with Site-322 management, he was moved to his containment chamber in the Pine Barrens, a home built with his reality-warping capabilities. Twice a year, a member of Site-322 personnel is to travel to this location and perform an interview with him. This person must have on them at all times Nestic pills to retain any and all memories, taken once every hour while within his vicinity, non-lethal weaponry, a standard body camera, and the SCP-8596 documentation. Ramsey is equipped with a locked mechanical collar that houses two small Scranton reality anchors, remotely monitored and controlled by Site-322's surveillance console. Should he remove his collar, personnel are to trigger the panic button on their body camera, attempt to peacefully exit the containment chamber, and travel back to base. He's to be entertained in conversation as long as his collar remains on, and as a former member of Foundation staff, a cordial level of familiarity is expected for his comfort in conversation. All interviews should ultimately lead the assigned staff to question what SCP-8596 is, and on rare occasions, Ramsey will initiate a conversation about 8596. After this line of discussion ends, assigned staff are to excuse themselves politely and exit the containment chamber. Researcher George Ambrose was designated as Ramsey's interviewer for the second half of 2024. He was given the above 8596 documentation and deployed to the remote home on October 13, 2024. He enters the house to find Ramsey seated on a couch, scribbling on the day's crossword. Logs are smoldering in the fireplace behind him, and he glances up at the door before turning to his newspaper. He tells Ambrose that he has a pot roast in the oven, which should be done in 5. Ambrose grabs a chair and sits close to the fireplace, shivering. Ramsey remarks that he's been having trouble getting the fire started, leading Ambrose to grab a nearby bottle of lighter fluid and dousing the logs. He tells Ramsey that he just needs a minute, calling him Eric. Ramsey asks if he's still allowed to call him that, and Ambrose says that it's actually encouraged for rapport. Ramsey stands, saying that the roast is done and asking if he would care to eat. Ambrose says that he's not hungry, despite his trip here taking 26 hours, so Ramsey says that he is hungry then. Also, if he was told not to take anything from him, imagine what eating together would do for their rapport. Ambrose pops a Nestic pill in his mouth and sits down at the table to eat. Ambrose eventually pulls out a sheet of paper and a pen, asking if they can start. Ramsay moves to a liquor cabinet and pours Ambrose and himself two glasses of bourbon, although Ambrose doesn't touch his. He asks Ramsay for his name, to make sure that he still knows it, and Ramsay spells his name out after downing his drink and pouring another. Ambrose then asks if he has had any violent thoughts lately, but Ramsay doesn't answer, instead asking why Ambrose is here. Director Lag came here not too long ago, and apparently he almost destroyed Site 322 with some machine he commissioned. Before him was Dr. Mooney, accused of embezzlement with that gumball machine they insist helps the site. Before that was Julian, after some creature got loose in his section. Ambrose wasn't sent here on his merits, he can tell that. Ambrose just says that he drew the short straw, and Ramsay asks if he's that unappealing, but Ambrose doesn't respond. Ramsay then asks what they told him, and Ambrose replies that they said he lost it. Ramsay says that that's a roundabout way of saying it, but sure, leading Ambrose to ask him to explain what happened. Ramsay asks, in turn, if he's ever had the pleasure of meeting the former Leandra Pollock. We're provided an ethics committee inquest for Dr. Leandra Pollock, who was accused of a number of crimes against the Foundation. She was accused of facilitating the death of researcher Ted Franklin after she suffered a nervous breakdown, attempting to dispose of the corpse of Franklin, which was covered in anomalous research material, against the guidelines created by the Acromatic Abatement Department, threatening security personnel with an anomalous artifact so they would remove the incident's video footage, forcing said security personnel to consume a toxic cocktail of unprocessed amnestics, leading to permanent memory complications for those affected, and desertion. Ramsay says that his abilities are both a blessing and a curse. He could look around a bar and figure out which woman he had a chance of bringing home just by the twitch of some muscle on her face, or the way her eyes dilated in the light. He wasn't employed by the Foundation for no reason, although Ambrose corrects him to say, integrated. The curse of his whole ordeal is just that he knows people too well. He read that report that the Ethics Committee gave him, and he knew it was over for her before then. Someone had it out for her, and just by reading that, he knew. The interrogation chamber is then altered by Ramsay to appear as Pollock's office, and we see a memory of him speaking with her. He remarks to her that, to be honest, he didn't quite like Ted. One thing he's always disliked about this site, not that he knows any of the others, is that it's a little lax here. He enjoys professionalism. And even though he's being forced to do this with her, he takes it seriously. Pollock replies that she takes her job seriously, and Ramsay says that he wasn't implying otherwise. Site 322's problem is that it doesn't place stock in professionalism. The site director is more than willing to shove a real problem into a doctor's desk while he goes off to contain funny anomalies, like children do with Pokemon. Pollock grunts in response, and Ramsay asks her if that reminds her of someone, to which she just says that Ted was a character. 2 hours of the memory are redacted for brevity, as Pollock says that it was focused on submolecular studies. She was tasked with creating a way to destroy something efficiently from the atomic level, something that Site 43 wanted to ease their disposal of anomalous material. Ramsay asks if it was ever finished, and she says that she placed it on the back burner. Ramsay tells her that he understands the pressure she's under, and he snaps his fingers, causing the room's security cameras to disappear. He asks if that has alleviated the pressure, and she says that it has, so he tells her that he needs her to work with him so he can alleviate even more pressure. Pollock replies that the microphone he has on his chest isn't helping much there, and he says that for once, someone read his mind. He powers the microphone off, and 30 minutes pass, until the cameras and microphones reactivate. Pollock is lying on the floor, crying, as Ramsey comforts her. He then nods to one of the cameras before security teams invade the room and remove Pollock. The office layout then dissolves, appearing like fading ocean waves as the home comes back into view. Pollock then admitted to the incidents that led to her arrest. Ambrose asks what was wrong with that, and Ramsey replies that she didn't do it. He allegedly placed the memory of the events in her head, and she was decommissioned. Ambrose swears in shock, asking why the hell he would do that, and Ramsey just says that they had it out for her. His job was never to get the truth. His job was to get the answers that the top wanted. Someone committed this crime, someone covered it up extremely well, and someone needed to take the fall, or else the foundation looks weak. He asks Ambrose if he's ever been in one of those containment cells, and Ambrose says that he hasn't. Ramsey remarks that he bets that no one employed by the foundation has spent the same amount in a containment cell as some of the anomalies they have locked in there. Even with the treats they give them to keep them sane, it's draconian. For him, he was in an 8x8 box with a cot he was too big for. He had a cracked television with 3 news channels, 3 crossword puzzle books, human interaction with guards for around 3 minutes total per day, and a record player without any music. All of his requested records were on back order. The worst part, though, was that his reality anchor was wired into the same switch that controlled his room's light. He begged and pleaded for those poisonous, blinding, buzzing lights to be turned off for just an hour so that he could sleep, but they refused out of fear that he would break out. He says that he wasn't going back in there, and there's nothing that would make him go back. We see a memory of armed personnel surrounding him, commanding him to lay on the ground with his limbs spread. He cocks his neck, and their weapons vanish. The sector is put on lockdown, and he looks to a nearby security camera. He says that he's going to let these men leave, but after that, he would like to speak to Director Lag. In the present, Ramsey says that Lag is a softy for anomalies, luckily for him, and they came to an understanding, leading him to this place. He was allowed to create a comfortable environment for himself before this collar was hung around his neck. Now he gets shipments of some entertainment every month, restocked food every week, and peace and quiet. The stress of being locked away forever is gone. Ambrose remarks that he's still locked away, but Ramsey says that it's a matter of perspective. This is a house he built with his own mind, made for his comfort and his alone. Meanwhile, Ambrose will have to go back to his car for a few hours, then in a plane for even longer, where he'll arrive back to that site, where he'll then work for a minimum of 10 hours before going to his dorm in that same site, before waking up and doing it all over again. Ambrose says that he empathizes with Ramsey, as he's never been happy about what they do with anomalies. It's one of those things you need to be aware of while also knowing that it's wrong. Ramsey tells him that he works within the system without changing it, and says that for the year that he was integrated with the Foundation, he never really met someone as outspoken as him. Ambrose replies that the main goal of the director of their site is what Ramsey is hoping for, but Ramsey dismisses it as the same containment in a new form. If Ambrose wanted to, he could leave today and go home forever. If he tried that when he was integrated, he'd be locked back up. Lag doesn't care about him or any other anomaly. He just cares about the optics, making everyone see him as the moral site director. Only he is able to work with anomalies, and in turn, make them work for the Foundation. The attention you can get from that is astronomical. Ambrose says that he doesn't let his opinions affect the place that puts food on his table, but Ramsey says that it's good to have morals, and calls him a diamond in the rough. Ambrose, however, calls himself just another cog in the machine, and his words about how they treat anomalies mean nothing, as he still works for the Foundation. Ramsey doesn't agree, though, and says that he thinks Ambrose knows that it means a lot more than nothing, considering the entirety of this conversation. After a pause, Ambrose downs his drink and pours himself another, downing that one as well. Ramsey says that he thinks this means way more than he can even tell, with or without this collar. We're provided a quick personnel dossier on Site 322's Department of Dimensional Studies, stating that Kenneth Wilkins and George Ambrose are researching a process for facilitated transdimensional travel. With the Foundation's current capabilities, travel into alternate, parallel dimensions requires either unmanageable and excessive energy use, or a pre-existing transdimensional way, or portal, being opened by an anomalous force. Ramsey comments that it seems interesting, and Ambrose says that it is. It was a lot of fun in the beginning, although he didn't really know Kenny too well before this. He thinks that they joined the Foundation the same year, but that was about it. It happened that they both had nothing going on and an interest in alternate dimensions, and they got along pretty well, all things considered. We see a memory of Wilkins sitting and watching a report on the Wanderer's Library's ways. Ambrose is seated across the room in their laboratory, scribbling equations on a page, when Wilkins asks him if anyone has seen a way being opened. Ambrose says that those are thousands of years old, although Wilkins counters that they have a few millennia old people roaming around here. Ambrose says that there's no way they get to talk to them, ignoring the fact that they're not even at this site. Wilkins moves to Ambrose and gently places his hand on his back, starting to massage him, and he asks what's wrong. Ambrose replies that he's stressed, as they're 3 weeks in and they have nothing to show for it. Wilkins tells him that they have a year, maybe two if they beg, but he guesses that he's the only one enjoying their long, exclusive alone time together. Ambrose didn't mean to imply that, and Wilkins says that they'll figure something out, some way and somehow. In the present, Ramsey comments on the two getting along well, and says that he doesn't really get surprised, but he's always intrigued by smart people doing smart things. You can show him a motherboard, explain how it works, explain what it does, and explain how each component helps with that, and he'd understand it fully, but if you asked him how someone came up with that, he'd be at a loss. He asks how Ambrose figured out transdimensional travel, and Ambrose says that funnily enough, the answer was in the ways. We see a memory of Wilkins and Ambrose presenting their findings to the O5 Council, with Wilkins explaining that ways are doorways into the Wanderer's Library, and while anomalous, they specifically fall under the umbrella of thaumaturgy. This has led their contemporaries to disregard them as impossible to replicate, but with their current findings, they've managed to synthesize the material used to create ways. Ambrose then powers a fume hood, and a beaker of metallic, rainbow-tinted liquid is spilt under the hood. As it sets, it gains an oil-slick appearance. Ambrose says that before this presentation, he went ahead and placed an item in the dimension this way leads to, and he proceeds to reach into the way, pulling a green apple out of it. In the present, Ambrose says that it was a convincing presentation, enough to get them some more in the budget department, and a few junior researchers to work with them. Ramsey remarks that their couple time was ruined, but Ambrose says that at this point, he had actually moved out of his dorm and into Wilkins' place. His sister said it was too fast, but sometimes you just know. Ramsey says that what he doesn't understand is how you go from what he assumes is an empty pocket dimension to transdimensional travel. Ambrose replies that as stupid as it might sound, it's all magic. In another memory of the O5 Council presentation, Wilkins says that on a technical level, the library's ways are programmed to enter into the library and out to the desired location based on a frequency. Every universe emits its own frequency, and each location within that universe has its own frequency all the way down. The trouble is just in channeling it. This is something that's like breathing to the librarians, but for them, it requires much more tuning and failing before they get something workable. Ambrose retrieves a second beaker of the liquid, takes a brush, and paints a door-sized way on the wall under the fume hood. He takes a blade from his pocket and whispers in an unknown language at it, causing it to radiate a purple glow. He then slices his hand, rubbing the blood on his palm and fingers, and holding his hand near the way, struggling to keep it close. He gasps as 7 glowing purple strands of energy shoot from the cut and attach to the edges of the way. He closes his eyes, and with his other hand, he gently pushes, pulls, and twists the strings. Behind the council, a crack in reality begins to form. Ambrose pulls the final strand, and a second way appears, shaking the room. Wilkins enters the original way, exiting behind the council. The two later exit the meeting silently, pacing down the hall. Smiles grow on both of their faces, and when they enter the elevator, they begin celebrating and hugging each other. Wilkins grabs Ambrose's neck and shouts happily into his face before the two kiss. Ramsay remarks that that is amazing, and Ambrose agrees, but says that it still wasn't trans-dimensional travel. It was a portal on Earth. He then downs a third glass of bourbon and pours himself another. He says that they needed trans-dimensional travel, which, at its core, is reasonably easy. You just grab a different main frequency and build from there. The trouble is that there are infinite dimensions and infinite frequencies. It would take him a lifetime to sift through everything available to find just one specific dimension, let alone what the overseers were asking. This was going to be a part of their early warning system, so they needed nearly exact replicas of their universe. Exact replicas are easy to find, just by tuning the frequency up or down a micrometer in or out on that third strand, but near duplicates are a lot harder. They found one eventually, just one. We see a memory of an autonomous drone flying out of a way, and Ambrose and Wilkins are nearby, both disheveled and clearly lacking sleep. Wilkins says that the frequency looks perfect, and he moves to hug Ambrose, who barely reciprocates. Ambrose remarks on how exhausted he is, and wonders how Wilkins keeps up this energy. He thinks that they should call it here and head home, making a request for a hazmat team to scope the area out, but Wilkins insists that they have to go in. Ambrose calls him crazy and says that going through the way without telling anyone first would be stupid. This is their job, and it has standards and procedures they have to follow. Wilkins still insists, however, and says that they're at the forefront of some of the best research that's ever been done on this topic. He doesn't want the first person to enter a man-made transdimensional portal to be some former military no-name. He insists that they deserve credit. And although Ambrose says that they'll get it, Wilkins challenges him to name one NASA scientist who worked on the Apollo project. Ambrose says that he'll just close the portal, but Wilkins walks over and shoves his hand through, saying that he's fine. Ambrose then says that he's not going to watch this, and he'll see him at home. He then left, and those were the last words that he knows Wilkins heard from his mouth. The dimension was an alternate Earth, nearly what they were looking for, but the major divergence was that the air had a parasitic, microscopic, airborne organism living in it. Billions, if not trillions of them, and everything there evolved to live symbiotically with it. He walked into the lab the next morning to see the hazmat team carting Wilkins' body out and fumigating the entire sector. He downs another glass of bourbon, but Ramsay grabs the bottle from him when he attempts to pour another. In another memory, Site Director Lag tells Ambrose that he understands how he's feeling, but it's not safe. Wilkins isn't doing well, and it's all happening very fast. He's really sorry, and he can't imagine what Ambrose is going through right now, but he has to view this objectively. Wilkins entered untested waters and picked up an entirely unknown sickness. The amount of protection the nurses have to wear is unbelievable, and it might kill him to go see him. Ambrose insists that he needs to see him, but Lag just apologizes again. Ambrose laments that he let this happen, and he should have stayed, but Lag tells him that he can't blame himself. Ambrose then begs to let him see him with his own eyes, just once, but Lag says that he can't. Ambrose tells Ramsay that they wouldn't let him see him, and he doesn't think he's ever wanted anything more. Ramsay says that it's awful, although he understands why they wouldn't let him. Ambrose says that all they kept telling him was that it wasn't safe, as he was contagious and he was dying. We see a memory of a way opening in Lag's office, and Ambrose exits it, wielding a crowbar. He finds a locked drawer at Lag's desk, and opens it with the crowbar, retrieving Lag's spare keycard and a pistol. He explains that Lag went home every night around 2 in the morning, and he knew that the security guys had a smoke break at 3:15 every night, giving him a window of about 5 minutes. Another way is open in the site's surveillance console, and Ambrose scans Lag's credentials, gaining admin privileges on the system. He sifts through camera feeds, eventually finding the medical bay, locating a room that's marked as occupied but has no surveillance. He says that there weren't any cameras in his room, although he doesn't know why. He had turned off the rest of the cameras, but he left the key card, and he guesses that there was an alert that the cameras were turned off, so the site was put on lockdown. He just wanted a video of their last time together, and just wanted to be able to see his face. They were so busy with work, they never got a picture together, and he wonders how that's even possible. He started to forget his face, although he could remember the feelings he felt when he saw him. He just wanted something to look at to remember him, something that was them. He went back to his lab and grabbed a body camera, as he just wanted to get a video of them hugging. We see a memory of Ambrose breathing heavily, sounding like he's holding back tears. He pulls the final purple strand extending from his hand and enters the way, exiting into a medical bay room. To the room's far left is a white bed, and a sheet covers something laying on it. Various medical devices, including IV therapy machines, ventilators, and heart rate monitors, beep and buzz loudly. He says that the room was empty, and nothing was in there to make him believe that Wilkins was as contagious as he was told. He approaches the bed and removes the sheet, seeing the body of Wilkins. He's extremely emaciated, with little to no fat or musculature on his body, and his skin looks more like cracked, flaking porcelain than flesh, giving him a doll-like appearance. His eyes are open, unblinking, and tinged green and cloudy. A mass is seen writhing in his stomach, and Ambrose falls to the ground, wailing. In the present, tears are streaming down Ambrose's face, and he says that he may have laid there for seconds or years crying. He couldn't tell. The only thing that broke him out was an alarm. A single security officer enters the room, calling for Ambrose to exit the room with his hands raised. The security officer continues to insist that he exit the room, but Ambrose ignores him, just asking why Wilkins looks like this, and if they're keeping him alive. The security officer eventually says that it's not their choice, and tells Ambrose that they'll get him amnestics. In response, Ambrose shoots the guard in the chest, and begins pacing the room in hysterics. He eventually vomits on the floor and approaches Wilkins' body. Inaudible dialogue is heard, and then another gunshot rings out. Ambrose grabs his body camera and the shell casings and exits the room. In the present, Ambrose is standing over the sink, gagging, and Ramsay places a hand on his shoulder. Ambrose asks what he did, and Ramsay suggests that he put him out of his misery. Ambrose says that he had to, as he couldn't leave him like that. Ramsay looks him in the eyes and tells him to focus, asking what happened next. Ambrose insists that he had to, and then says that he opened another way, the one where they had put the apple during their presentation. He starts to break down, but Ramsay tells him again to focus. Ambrose says that he grabbed the bed and put Wilkins in there, along with the guard and the camera, leaving them in that cold, empty place. Ambrose continues to cry into the sink, and then Ramsay unclips his collar and removes it. The walls of the house begin rippling like ocean waves before fading away entirely. An interrogation chamber is revealed, and Ramsay looks to a security camera, nodding. Security teams invade the room and remove Ambrose, and Lag enters as they leave. He says that that was absolutely amazing, and Ramsay thanks him, handing him the collar. Lag says that that was much faster than he thought it would be, although Ramsay says that he watched maybe 2,000 tapes on the guy and hoped it would be shorter. Lag remarks that the story he threw in there about the researcher he falsely convicted was especially nice, and the ethics committee is going to be very happy that they didn't have to go on trial here. Ramsay replies that he hired him for a reason, and tells him to scrub that description of him from the document, as he doesn't want anyone reading that. Lag is happy to oblige, saying that Ambrose was in isolation for a month and still wouldn't say a word, congratulating him again on his great work. Ramsay then says that he'll take care of the rest of the paperwork. We're given a note stating that the pseudonym of SCP-8596-1 has been removed from this document. Any remaining information referencing 8596-1 should be submitted to Site-322's RISA representative so that it may be deleted from this file. Ramsay's faux designation, its addition to this file, and its deletion from this file were all approved by 05-3. We then see the actual document for SCP-8596, which was the body of Kenneth Wilkins. Wilkins was originally employed in the Department of Dimensional Studies, tasked with creating an affordable, replicable method of transdimensional travel. After traveling into an alternate Earth, Wilkins was infected with an airborne parasite that quickly ravaged his body. Site-322's medical personnel conferred with the Ethics Committee and Overseer Council, determining that the research potential of this pathogen outweighed allowing Wilkins to pass. As such, his body was kept alive artificially until research was complete, at which time it would be decommissioned. His body was neutralized by a rogue member of Site-322's personnel, who suffered a mental breakdown following a personal issue related to the 8596 case. Wilkins was shot in the forehead with a pistol along with the security officer who attempted to arrest Ambrose, Benjamin Seymour. Seymour was awarded the Foundation Star Award after his death for his sacrifice during this incident. The corpses, the murder weapon, and miscellaneous pieces of evidence were subsequently hidden in an alternate Earth. The rogue agent, Ambrose, has been interrogated and confessed to the murder of Kenneth Wilkins and Benjamin Seymour. For these offenses, along with breaking and entering, credential theft, unauthorized use of thaumaturgy, misuse of Foundation resources, and participation in an unapproved workplace relationship, Ambrose has been imprisoned at Site-06 and is awaiting termination. So, what we have here is something of an SCP version of the Black Mirror Christmas special, with inspiration taken from that episode on purpose. There was no cabin out in a remote location, and Ambrose never left the site. Instead, his memories and perception were being manipulated and altered by Ramsay. Ramsay was not, in fact, in containment, but is still actively working for the Foundation to interrogate criminals in order to extract confessions. Ambrose had been in solitary confinement for a month at this point, and still had said nothing about his crime, meaning that the Foundation was going to have to give him a trial. To avoid this, they used Ramsay to bring out a confession, and we can see how Ramsay manipulated him throughout the conversation, sympathizing with him and offering him alcohol to loosen him up. This is certainly not the Foundation at their best, when it comes to ethics, but it does showcase their cruel efficiency to maintain their operations. It's very likely that Ambrose was going to be terminated no matter what, so all they really focused on was saving themselves some time and effort in avoiding a trial. In a better world, perhaps they would have made accommodations to allow Ambrose to see Wilkins one more time, but perhaps also in a better world, Wilkins wouldn't have thrown his life away so carelessly. In the end, Wilkins is dead, Ambrose is to be terminated, Ramsay continues to dutifully serve the Foundation regardless of ethical concerns, and the Foundation continues to march forwards.